cheese. All right, welcome back to That's Some Cheese, part of the Vendetta Sports Podcast Network. Today is Monday, August 3rd. We have a very special guest on the line, of course, our Australian correspondent, Jarrett Prosser. What's going on today, Jarrett?
Very special guest. I've been promoted. Thank you, Trey. I'm doing well, mate. How's things up there in Pennsylvania?
I'm surprised you knew what state I'm in. Technically,
I'm an educated man, Trey.
Technically, right now I'm in Maryland doing the store, which is a little bit south.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, things are moving and grooving with the site, so I'm happy.
Yeah, look, for anyone who hasn't checked out the store yet, do it. I, obviously, being on the other side of the world, I've got to wait for a paddle steamer to get me my gear. But we'll put it up on Twitter whenever it comes in. I'll chuck a beer in my stubby holder. What do you call them? Koozies?
Yeah, koozies, I guess.
I literally never heard of that word before I saw it on the website.
It's a little t-shirt for your beer.
Oh, yeah, no, I know what they are. We just call them stubby holders because they, you know, does what it says on the tin. It holds a stubby. But, yeah, I'd literally never heard of the word koozie. I guess petitions my mates, even some who live in the States, and there was only one, and he lives in New York, who said, yeah, no, it's a common word. But everybody else went, what the fuck is a koozie? So, but yeah, when they come through, we'll don them, we'll get them up on the interwebs and show people what they look like and get on it, guys, support the site.
Yeah, I have honestly never used one before. I'm like, you're kind of soft if you use that. But honestly, I used it because we made them, and it's like, it's maybe a game changer. Kind of like it.
I'm actually shocked and appalled that you've never used one. These things are, I don't know, maybe it's the ridiculous drinking culture that we all grow up with in Australia, but yeah, I mean, if my kids ever went and got me a beer or a cider or something out of the fridge, I can guarantee it comes back in a stubby holder. It's almost in the DNA over here.
It's a little bit of a game changer.
Well, you won't know yourself. I mean, you don't have to, you know, smash a drink down now before it gets warm and awful. It's, we're drifting away from the whole sport ethos of the site here. But, yeah, I'm utterly shocked that you've never used one, mate. They're fantastic little things.
Yeah, so check out the store if you have not. We posted some pictures on the Twitter and Instagram so you can see what the products actually look like. I'm actually more than thrilled about it. I think they look better than I even anticipated. So check out the store if you haven't. Let's get into the podcast here. You wrote down a bunch of topics, so we'll go over all those. And then if I have anything to add, we'll add those on. But your first one here. Are the Bucks actually being slept on? Can Middleton maybe finally break through and have that kind of playoff performance we've been looking for? What are your thoughts on the Bucks here? Because I've said this personally as a Celtics fan, they are the single only team I'm worried about in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, they are miles ahead of everybody else in the East. They've got the guy who... For all the arguments about LeBron and Kawhi, I would say that Giannis is the best player in the league at the moment for the simple reason that he can, you know, he's unstoppable at both ends, and he's able to do it, and this is really crucial, he's able to do it game in and game out, unlike Kawhi, who has to manage his body. And he can do it for a full 48 minutes, unlike LeBron, simply because LeBron is 10 years older than him. So when it comes down to that that big 48-minute effort to drag a team through, Kawhi can possibly do it better than Giannis if his body's right, but you would trust Giannis more on a game-to-game basis. You'd still trust LeBron in the moment, and we saw that in the Clippers-Lakers game on the first day of the restart. If there's a single moment where something needs to happen, you'd trust LeBron ahead of anybody else to make it happen, but... basketball is not just a moment, it's a series of moments over 48 minutes. And I think Giannis is probably the man who can create the most moments at both ends of the court. You mentioned Middleton. People really, really need to stop sleeping on Chris Middleton. Two-time All-Star this season, 21-6-4, and ridiculous splits, 50-41-91. He makes clutch shots. He plays excellent defense. He's a willing distributor. If you designed a foil for Giannis in a lab, you'd come up with Chris Middleton. The guy is a wonderful baller. He's just so understated, but he is an outstanding basketballer. If he played in a market where he was the guy, name one of maybe 15 or 20 teams, if he was the best player on that team, we'd be talking about him like a superstar. It just happens that he's a second-round pick who is Giannis' right-hand man, and that's the reason that we don't speak about him as such. I think he's a wonderful player.
I do want to bring up, because it was the very first game, or very first real game of the restart when they played the Celtics. I honestly do, and you said they're miles ahead. I honestly do think the Celtics can beat them. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you watch that game. Kemba Walker plays 20 minutes. Jason Tatum goes 2 of 16 or something, and they're 1 point down. And honestly, the refs, and I'm not a guy that complained about the refs, but I didn't know you could hit people in the nuts with 5 fouls and stay in the game. They literally like refused to let Giannis foul out. He fouled out like multiple times and they're like, nah, he's staying in. So
the classic phrase, Trey, I'm not a man who bashes the refs, but
I do think they could beat him. Jason Tatum was terrible that first game, and he was lights out against the Blazers, and Kemba Walker only played a handful of minutes. I really do think they can beat him. I'm not saying it'll happen. They're the only team I'm worried about in the East, but I do think they definitely have a puncher's chance.
Oh, they do. I absolutely agree. I think that there are two teams that can legitimately take down Milwaukee, and Toronto, for all of their strengths, isn't one of them. I think the Sixers can, but, you know, the Sixers are a trick-or-treat team. If you get the best Sixers for four games, they probably win, you know, they might win three of them. But the Celtics are a team that are extremely consistent. They are very, very, very well coached. And just the makeup of the team, they might be the team that's best equipped to give Milwaukee fits, especially with Bledsoe out. You mentioned Tatum, but Brown and Hayward can all go off and win a game off their own hand.
Both of them were great Tatum's against Portland.
Yeah, absolutely. And when Hayward's another one who, if his body feels right, he looks a different guy. Marcus Smart is, like, he's small compared to Giannis. Everyone's small compared to Giannis, but he's the exact type of defender that Giannis
hates.
The guy that can get underneath him. Yeah, you know, he does. The guys that give Giannis the most trouble, and, you know, we're talking relative here. It's, you know, not many people really bother Giannis, but he's the sort of guy, Marcus Smart, that can get underneath a big, agile guy. He's fast enough to stay with his moves. And because he's got that low center of gravity relative to Giannis, he can knock him off. He can, like, Giannis's balance is remarkable, but Smart is the sort of guy who can just throw him a little bit. And that, in some games, that might be enough. So I agree with you that I don't think Boston would win a series, but if Boston and Milwaukee match up, it wouldn't surprise me if it went to 6 or even 7.
This isn't on the list either, but I do want to bring this up because I talked about this with Alex on his podcast. Marcus Smart needs to be the Defensive Player of the Year. I understand that I'm a homer, but why does it have to be a big guy award? Does anybody guard 1 to 5 better than that guy? And it almost seems like, and I know your guy Rudy Gobert's won the award a lot, but I've seen him guard, you know, small little Russell Westbrook and James Harden and when they play Houston, and it doesn't go so well. Who guards better 1 to 5 than Marcus Smart?
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. and that's the thing. Gobert won't win Defensive Player of the Year. It will be Giannis. If it's not Giannis, like, forget all the other looting that has gone on in the States in the last 6 months. Burn shit down if Giannis doesn't win the MVP and the DPOY, because it'll be a travesty. The one thing I'd say about Smart is that Smart creates, having a guy like Marcus Smart means that a coach like Brad Stevens can get creative with his matchups.
That's my whole argument.
But you can't build a defense around Smart in the way that you can Rudy Gobert or Joel Embiid. Those guys, if you go into the key, instantly people are looking to kick the ball out rather than have it shoved back in their face. It changes the way, it changes the map, the shot map, the opposition. Smart is an excellent firefighter. You can put him onto anyone and he will help slow them down. But he's not somebody that you create a game plan around. That's the only thing that holds Marcus Smart back for mine, that you can't build a team defense around him. Right? More, he's more of a guy that you stick onto the hot player to slow him down.
My whole argument is, why does it have to be a big guy award? Because what he does defensively, to me, is incredible.
It is. He is the best defensive guard in the league. Apologies to Chris Dunn. But he's superb, Chris Dunn.
It just makes me laugh.
He plays NBA level offense as well as I do. But
when the Celtics had the third pick, so many people wanted him. Just makes me laugh.
Was that the Jaylen Brown draft?
Yeah, and people hammered them for picking him.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah. I got to admit,
So every time I hear Chris Dunn, I just think of that day.
I hate to say, but I was probably one of them that was a little bit nonplussed at the Brown pick, but man, he's so good. I think it's purely the fact that you can create a team defense around some of the other guys, whereas you can't with Smart, unless you have very, very specific personnel around him. But on that team where you've essentially got, you know, three wings and an undersized center in Tice, swinging him out, you put in Cantor, who couldn't guard a bollard, you need a guy like Smart. He's perfect for that Celtics team. And now that he's hitting threes, you know, you can play him down the stretch and you know that he's not going to rob you at the other end as well. The other thing with the Celtics, you mentioned Kemba before and him playing limited minutes. He is probably the wild card in a matchup with the Bucks because Bledsoe's out. If you can get 30 to 35 really good minutes out of Kemba, DiVincenzo's not going to stop him. The fossilized remains of Wes Matthews isn't going to stop him. Hill's getting old. The only guy that could really stay in front of him in that guard rotation is Bledsoe, who's not there. So Kemba could feast on Milwaukee's backcourt. He could be the swing player in a series, or at least make the series really tight.
Yeah, I've brought this up too. This might be a stupid argument, but I think he's just one of those guys that will rise to the occasion, and I know he's not been in many competitive playoff series, but at UConn, this is a guy that carried a average team to a national title. I think he does have that little DNA to where he will rise in a playoff series.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'd forgotten about his college exploits. The NBA, the pressure of the NBA can change a bloke over the, what's it been now, 9-10 years he's been in the league.
Yeah.
Now, it's been a long time since he's been in a meaningful game. But at the same time, is he the bloke that takes the last shot on this team, or is it Tatum?
That's a good question. I'm not sure Brad really Stevens, you know, struggles with sleep at night with that one, though, either.
Actually, knowing Stevens, it'll be Hayward that takes it. can't shake his own college career. Going back to the Bucks, you know, I do think, look, as much as we've just talked up the Celtics, the Bucks should beat the Seas if they play them in a 7-game series. They're such a deep and versatile roster. Like, everybody talks about the Clippers' depth. Milwaukee have a similar, if not better, amount of depth, particularly in the front court. They've got a great coach, a great system. The one thing that worries me about Milwaukee is the reliance on that system. Coach Bud, for all of his strengths, all of his ability to create a game plan, hasn't really shown an affinity for successful plan Bs, or any plan Bs, really. So if you can slow down option number one or game plan number one, do they have another string to their bow? I'm not sure they do yet. And this season, the dominance that Milwaukee have had over the league, they haven't really had the need, let alone the opportunity to show any plan B. That might be a good thing. They might have something up their sleeve that no one's seen, but you would rather them have, I guess, battle-tested their plan B before the playoffs happen.
Well, I think that goes back to the Toronto series last year. Milwaukee goes up 2-0. Nick Nurse, you know, he has his black magic, and all of a sudden Toronto wins the next four games.
Oh, he's like the happy version of Rick Carlisle, Nick Nurse, isn't he? He's just this mad scientist who can create something out of nothing, just a puff of smoke, and suddenly there's a winning game plan there. But unlike Carlisle, Nick Nurse smiles every now and again. I think the last time I saw Rick Carlisle smile, it was back on the Letterman show after they won the championship and the Mavericks did the top 10. I think that's the last time I saw him smile. And he was probably pissed as a newt. He was probably still drunk. So I love Nick Nurse because he's such a brilliant, brilliant and unconventional tactician. I think that's what I like about him more, that he's unconventional. But he seems to just be enjoying the ride as well.
I can't believe how good he is. Like, how many times do you just promote an assistant and he's that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, that, if we can jumble up the order of what we wanted to talk about, because I think that's a really good segue into talking about the Knicks and their coaching hire. For all of the brilliance that we see from a guy who's come from left field, become an assistant, moved his way up the chain, Mike Miller was doing a really good job in New York. With such a young side, they could have grabbed notable development coach Kenny Atkinson, who, you know, already lives in the city. Instead, they go for Tibbs. Now, I've got a raft of thoughts here, Trey, but have the floor, mate. Tell me what you think about this hire.
Well, as someone who loved the 08 Celtics team, I think Tibbs is a great defensive mind. He was really good at setting up defenses because, you know, Doc Rivers, he's kind of a personality guy, you know? He kind of goes out there, he vibes well with the vets, but Tibbs was really, really good for their defensive schemes, but he's not a head coach, which is the problem. He plays his guys too many minutes, and like that 08 Celtics team, if he was running that team, Garnett would be playing 40 minutes a game, and they would have lost in the first round. So, I don't think he's a good head coach. I think he's a good defensive scheme kind of guy.
Yeah, to put it in the football parlance, he's the perfect defensive coordinator.
There you go.
Yeah. He has said all the right things. You know, he's talked about the evolution of the game, his evolution in his game plan, minutes management strategies on offense in particular. But, you know, we heard all the same stuff when he went to the Wolves as well. So I was more inclined to believe it when he was in Minnesota. Having heard it all before and seen nothing change, I'm a little less likely to believe what he's saying. But having said that, he has gone to a place where he was successful and had that game plan fail in a second place. So maybe that failure chastises him enough that he does change. I will just be surprised when I see it. One other little thing on that. I mentioned Kenny Atkinson. Oh, sorry, go on, Trey.
I was going to say, but it's the Knicks, so probably not.
Well, this is the thing. It's the same, like, you know, they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. The Knicks for 20 years have been going, who's the biggest name? Let's get them. Whether it's player, GM, team president, coach, whatever the situation, it's let's go with the starriest, the brightest name, the one we can stick on all of the headlines, and it inevitably fails. Whereas you get all these other teams who find these unheard of, unheralded coaches. They pick up bench players and turn them into, if not stars, then really good, solid starters. And the Knicks see all that and go, no, not for us. This finding success on the cheap thing, no, we're going to do it a different way. We're going to suck, and then we're going to trade all of our first round draft picks for the next 1,000 years. I do not get how that team operates. Yeah, you know, if we can have trades vetoed by the league back when the Hornets traded Chris Paul, if we can have the league stepping in to the Cavs in the 80s and enforcing the Stepien rule, there has to be some sort of mercy killing of some of these people running the Knicks, surely.
I can't disagree.
And a quick word on Kenny Atkinson. How he didn't get this job is beyond me. Like, I know it's the Knicks, and you know, organized thought is something that often eludes that front office. But you know, how his agent wasn't able to sell him into the job, he should be fired or shot. But Kenny Atkinson was just so perfect for this team, and to see him sitting on the sideline whilst Tibbs gets another go to drive RJ Barrett into dust, I'm just stunned at that. I really am.
He'll get another job.
If we can... He will. He's a very, very good coach. And let's face it, if it wasn't for the fact that Kyrie is Kyrie, he'd still be in Brooklyn.
Yeah. You love that guy, too.
He's this massive personality. Kyrie might be the most frustrating player in the league for me. He absolutely drives me nuts. He's a dazzling player, but I've never really seen him make consistent winning plays. He plays zero defense, and he seems to be content burning down the castle from inside the throne room everywhere he goes.
He's your Westbrook.
It's such a shame. Oh, no, Westbrook.
No, I'm saying Westbrook.
No. Westbrook inspired like loyalty out of his fan bases, out of his teammates. Kyrie seems to have done none of that. He just seems to be, you know, I don't necessarily like using this term about a basketballer, but he seems cancerous. He really does. It's
well, that's my argument for Westbrook. I don't blame Durant. I don't blame Durant for leaving. I would have left too.
Yeah, Durant's, man, he knows how to pick him, doesn't he? He goes from Westbrook, who wants his own team, to basketball utopia, decides that's not enough for him, and then goes and plays with Kyrie, who is a worse version of Westbrook both on and off the court. KD, man, you know, you need to make better choices than this. You're a smart man. You know, I've listened to your interviews, your podcasts and whatnot. You don't strike me as an idiot, but you do make some silly choices every now and again.
I think he got bothered by the media. It's like, it's unfair. You gotta challenge yourself or whatever.
Well, absolutely. And look, if he brings a title to the Nets, he'll be a hero, just like if Kawhi can bring one to the Clippers. But you know, he talked about leaving OKC for basketball reasons, and he found Nirvana, and he found that, you know, the grass isn't always greener. But he's gone back into a situation that he willingly left as a younger man, and I'm a bit flummoxed by that. I still don't get it 1 year on. I know he wanted to be in New York, and well, if your option is the Knicks or the Nets, you take the Nets every day and twice on Sundays. But it's surprising that he's gone there with Kyrie. That's the thing that surprises me.
I think it'll depend on if they can get Brad Beal.
Oh, if they get Brad Beal, man, that team will be something else. Having said that, you know, just thinking on the fly, Beal, you know, I love Brad Beal. He's one of my favourite players to watch, but he hasn't always been the good foot soldier either.
No.
You could get some real disturbing alchemy with KD, Kyrie.
I think they need one more guy, though.
They do need one more guy, absolutely. Maybe LeVert is that guy. Maybe Dinwiddie's that guy. I don't quite think they're good enough to be third stars, mostly because they need the ball, and Kyrie and KD need the ball. Brad Beal would be perfect in that he can run an offense by himself, or he can you know, spot up off the ball and be deadly as well. He's almost a mini Curry in that sense. He can be equally as damaging on and off the ball.
Let's go to your topic number two here, because we did get a little off track. I think, and I don't even care about the Clippers-Lakers game that happened. I think the Clippers are still miles ahead. I would take them in five over the Lakers.
Yeah, I think I would too. They are such a deep team. You think about what had to happen. LeBron, we mentioned LeBron being the king of the moment. He created another moment in that game, as much as it was relatively low stakes. But that Clippers team, they were missing, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams and his chicken wings, and Pat Beverly only played 14 minutes or something like that from memory.
Yeah.
If you get those guys back in the team, imagine Harrell and Williams and, I guess, Beverly with about 10 more minutes being able to play in that game instead of Patrick Patterson and Reggie Jackson.
Joe Kim Noah was on the floor.
Well, there you go. That's another one as well. The Clippers can match up with anyone. They are both deep and incredibly malleable. They can put any lineup that they want on the floor. There's such a deep team. And we talked about Budenholzer being very stuck to, very married to his plan. Doc Rivers is, I think, really underrated as an offensive X, as an O's coach. He is somebody who has the creativity to look at a particular five and say, well, this five can do this. Let's run X, Y, and Z. But if I pull this player out, suddenly we're playing in a different formation, a different setup. He's the sort of coach who can have a whole bunch of different plans on the fly.
I always love Doc Rivers.
Yeah, he's a very underrated coach. And one thing I will say, though, AD is probably the one player that could swing that series. The Clippers with Kawhi, with PG, with Marcus Morris, they have guys that can guard LeBron, but they don't have anybody that can guard AD.
Which is why they really needed Harrell.
Well, look, Harrell, he tries on defense, but he's not a stopper. He's not anything close.
It's better than what they were putting out there the other day.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing. I think Zubac is a very, very good defensive center, but he's just too slow. He's not quick enough for Davis.
Yeah.
Marcus Morris guarding him? Yeah, please. Marcus Morris isn't going to stop AD. And frankly, Harrell won't either. And as we get into the playoffs, it's reasonable to expect that we'll see less JaVale McGee and less Dwight Howard. But even in that game it was Saturday our time, it was a game where the Lakers struggled until they went to AD at the five and Kuzma at the four, and suddenly things just opened up. Now, the Clippers can match that at least size-wise and do enough to stop Kuzma from impacting them, but they still don't have anybody that can stop AD. If you let Davis go to work, he could get 35 a game in a series against the Clippers. For all of their defensive prowess, he could absolutely carve them up.
Which is why it drove me insane when he's like, nah, I don't like playing center. Dude, you can't say that.
I get it that he wants to protect himself from the rough and tumble of a regular season, but come playoffs, you don't get a choice. If your coach says you're playing this way, then you do it. Yeah, you come across as such a prima donna if you don't do it, especially when you certainly as an undersized center, is the best. Yeah, he's the best 4-5 in the league. He might be the best 5 in the league, but he's certainly the best 4-5.
How about let's move to the Blazers, and Alex did a post on this. He's got some takes, but this one is actually good. Portland's just different with use of Nurkic. They really are.
And Collins.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Portland side is... Yeah, this Portland side is really, really good. I like them a lot. People have focused so much on the Pels chasing down the Grizz that they've kind of forgotten that Dame and CJ have an actual functioning NBA caliber front court alongside them now. And personally, I think they're going to romp it into that 9 seed. It won't even be close. And if that happens and Portland make it into the ninth seed, Memphis should be very, very afraid.
I totally agree. I watched them against the Celtics yesterday. They, like, since when is Gary Trent good? He was like 7 of 10 from downtown. All this team does is just make buckets.
Gary Trent is underrated. I like Gary Trent. Now, he's not a, you know, 7 for 10 from three-pointer guy every other game, but he's better than what people think. A lot of people have slept on him because all of the focus goes on to Dame, CJ, Nurkic. When Carmelo got there, a lot of the focus went on to him, for better or worse. But let's just, I guess, project forward. Let's assume that Portland make the ninth seed, they take out Memphis, they play the Lakers in the first round. How many games do they take off LA, do you think?
I think it may be closer than people think.
I agree.
I think they could take six.
Yeah. If there is one contender that is ripe for the picking for a side like Portland, it's probably the Lakers. You know, Davis isn't big enough to handle Nurkic. And with Avery Bradley out, who guards Dame and CJ?
That's a big problem.
Yeah. And this is where Avery Bradley is a really, really big loss for this team. Now, Caruso's stepping up, and you know, that's great. Dion Waiters is showing that there's still some of life. And I'm really surprised at that. I think you probably remember I wrote an article for you saying the positives of signing Dion Waiters, and it was just a blank article. And you actually went and published it, which I'm immensely impressed by. I really didn't think you'd put that up. I thought you'd just laugh at me and say, "Oh, Jared, you're so funny, you dickhead," and just leave it be. But Waiters has really shocked me. He looks good. And the fact that he can create his own shot off the dribble or hit a catch and shoot three, putting him in Rondo's place. Rondo doesn't play defense anymore. He hasn't played defense for the last decade. He's not as good a playmaker as he used to be. He could never shoot, which means he needs the ball in his hand, and that's taking the ball out of LeBron's or AD's hand. For all of his name recognition, Rondo has been below replacement level for probably 4 or 5 years.
Except that one playoff series in Chicago, he just decided to play.
That's about it. I think he was still playing well then, but that was the one where he went toe to toe with Butler, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, that was the one where he's in Chicago. I know the one you mean. Yeah, that was a revenge one. I think Portland could prove a real issue for a lot of teams in this playoffs. They'll have to get through the Lakers, which is. And to be clear, we're not predicting that Portland will beat the Lakers, but it could be one of the best series of the first round, assuming that's the way the cards fall, that Portland do play the Lakers.
Now, you have the Spurs on this list. They're one team I do not take seriously at all. And until DeRozan and Aldridge go, I don't take them seriously at all.
Well, they're down one of them. This is the thing with the Spurs. You can stab them, you can burn them at the stake, you can bury them alive. It's like the bride in Kill Bill. They just don't die. No matter what you do to this team, they still win basketball games. And buggered if I know how it happens. This is a team that, you know, they struggled all through the regular season until LaMarcus Aldridge started hitting threes, or taking threes, really. And they lose LMA, so they're stuck with DeRozan and not much else. And they're playing, like, it's only two games, admittedly. It's the smallest of sample sizes, but they've been really, really good since the restart.
How many games are they behind, though? Is it four or three?
Too many.
Two?
It's too many. No, too many.
Oh, okay.
Too many.
Okay.
Yeah. No, God, no, they're not two games. And look, it's a moot point anyway, because Portland could. If things go their way, they could almost snatch the 8th seed outright. They could sit there in 8th and play Memphis in 9th. I really don't think anybody else is going to get into that 8th, 9th playoff.
Well, New Orleans looks great.
Oh, my sarcasm meter just exploded. I don't know why. it's going to be Memphis and Portland in that series. But the Spurs, man, I didn't see the logic in bringing them into the bubble, but there's just something about that side. Maybe it's just the aura of Pop, but you can't kill them. You really can't kill them. They just keep coming back for more.
They need better players, though.
Oh, they do. They'll miss the playoffs, and the streak will be over, and hopefully from there they can start to embrace a rebuild, because they do have some really intriguing young players, even players that are not necessarily heralded, like Jakob Poeltl the Turtle. He's a very good defensive center, and he's adequate on offense. If he's your starting center, you're not doing too badly. It's all of the positions around him that they need to sort out. You know, is DeJounte Murray actually a star? Is Derek White a starter or a gunner? You know, a good guy off the bench. What the hell is Lonnie Walker going to be? Yeah, there's a lot of questions for this team, but there are some intriguing pieces there. If they can embrace a couple of years of angling for the higher draft picks, and they nail those picks, and let's face it, it's the Spurs. They tend to nail their picks. They could be, you know, back to, if not contention, then certainly a mid-run playoff side in, you know, 3 years, 4 years at the most.
See, you heard it here first. Spurs win the Kawhi Leonard trade. Jakob Poeltl's on fire. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure that's what I said. That's right. If the aggregators are listening, roll with it. We'll get some publicity out of it. I do think the Spurs, I didn't want to spend this much time on the Spurs, to be honest, but since we're here, I do think the Spurs do have a better future than what people think. They've got a lot of the mid-tier, the good-level starters. They've got a lot of guys developing to that level. I don't think any of their guys will develop into stars, and that's the tough bit. They could end up being a little bit like, the yard sale version of Budenholzer's Hawks. There's no out-and-out star there, or even the Pistons from the mid-2000s. There's no absolute superstar there, but they might consistently win 45 games a year just with the core they've got once it develops. If they can add one or two really good pieces in there, they could be a 50-win team pretty easily.
Let's go to the Jonathan Isaac injury. I did not see this in real time. I didn't even know what happened until I woke up. But he's a guy that looked completely lost his rookie year but is now functional. What are your thoughts here with the Isaac injury? Because, I mean, Orlando was going to get blown out in the first round anyway, but what do you have here?
Well, look, first of all, thoughts with Jono Isaac. He's I really enjoy watching him play. I love watching agile and active defensive bigs, and he's one of the best. He's already an outstanding defensive player. I can't remember what the reason was, but I remember there was talk of Orlando not bringing Isaac into the bubble. And I can't remember for the life of me what that reason was off the top of my head, but, man, I know you can't foresee this sort of stuff, but the Magic have got to be just, it's a sliding doors moment. They've got to be regretting that decision so badly right now. And he is the cornerstone for that team. Aaron Gordon, I hate to say it, but he won't be a star. Fournier is a good starter. Fultz might develop into something. He might not. Bamba, wall, but he's still very, very raw. You know, Isaac looked like the guy they could start to build around. But, man, it's such a body blow for that team. And, you know, I really hope Isaac can get back to what he was, because he's a very, very good young player.
And it'll kill him for next year, too.
Well, yeah, you know, number one pick. Who's the number one pick for next season? Who's a consensus pick? I don't know. I haven't looked into the college ranks that far, but, you know, there might be a high pick coming Orlando's way.
All right, let's go to the next thing on the list here. You got players stepping up with more opportunities. Jared Allen, Thomas Bryant, Rui Hachimura, Alex Caruso. I think the one that stands out to me here is, well, I'll let you talk about Hachimura because you called that one. But, like, the fact that the Nets are just so, I don't even know what the word is, that they got to play DeAndre Jordan is insane to me.
Yeah, we spoke about the Nets and the potential the potential addition of Beal and how he can be a bit touchy at times. You know, we didn't really touch on DeAndre Jordan. He's just as we'll use that word. We'll say touchy. He's just as unpredictable personality wise as Kyrie and KD. I mean, he's still a good, serviceable center. There's nothing wrong with DeAndre Jordan, probably at the money he's on there is, but he's still a good, serviceable NBA center. But what is he, 32 years old now? His athleticism is not what it was. He hasn't been a very good defensive player for a number of years. He's still a really good rebounder, can block the odd shot, and can rim run fairly well. But they've got a young guy who does all of that stuff better.
And it's insane.
It's really good to see Jared Allen getting clear air. You know, it's almost a little bit like Nurkic and Whiteside in Portland. Whiteside has been surprisingly good this year. But now with Nurkic back, you've got someone who does all of the stuff that Whiteside does, only better. So, of course, Whiteside's going to go to the bench. And Allen has been better than DeAndre Jordan all season.
Yeah.
It's purely the fact that he's mates with the two big free agent additions that is... Well, first of all, gotten him a contract, but secondly, gotten him the starting job. He's a backup these days.
The Thomas Bryant one's interesting too. Former second round pick, he really bounced around for a while. Like, I believe he got picked by the Lakers. Nobody really wanted him.
Lakers pick. Well, he was one of the guys that the Lakers dumped in a salary dump trade, weren't they, to make room for Davis?
I don't even know if he was on the roster at that point.
I'm pretty sure he was. I'm just going to have a quick look, actually. We'll just look up Thomas Bryant.
I'm refusing to talk about Caruso, by the way. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you've been very much off that bandwagon since day one. Here we go. He was traded as part of the a salary dump to try and swing an AD trade the year before they did it. But if you look at what he did in LA in his rookie season, 15 games he played in, four and a tick under 5 minutes a game, and on boards a game. Yeah, this season he's 12 and a half, seven boards. A little or better block a game. And look, he's not who's going to anchor a defense. He's an offense. He looks like a legitimate, on a good team, a legitimate backup five. Somebody who can torch an opposition backup five and doesn't have to play that much defense. He's the sort of guy that could, if you played him 20 minutes in a meaningful playoff game, he could go out and get you over 14 points in a quarter. And that's a valuable thing. He's overmatched as a starting NBA center, but I do like Thomas Bryant. He has a role in this league on a good team.
Yeah, I'll let you rant about Hachimura. I know you have T.J. Warren on this list too for players making a leap. I really loved him coming out of college. I really wanted the Celtics to pick him that year, and then when he got to Phoenix, I was like, wow, I'm an idiot. This guy's not that good. But all of a sudden he knows how to play. Was it just like, hey, I'm in Phoenix, I stink? Or what is it here?
Yeah, there's something about the water in Phoenix and Sacramento. It just robs guys of their ability to play. It's almost like, if you remember the original Space Jam, how the Monstars go in and suddenly Charles Barkley doesn't know how to walk. There's something about playing for Sacramento and Phoenix that just ruins guys. And got to admit, I wasn't huge on T.J. Warren, and especially his three-point shooting. And that was the thing that came across in that 53-point game. That last three-pointer that he hit right in Simmons' grill was just huge. I was watching that game with my kids, and both of my kids just giggled, like literally giggled when that last three went in. They're like, this is amazing. And my youngest, my nine-year-old, was sitting there going, who is TJ Warren? I've never heard of him. So, yeah, you're not the only one, mate. Plenty of people, plenty of NBA people wouldn't know who TJ Warren is. He's
I loved him coming out of NC State. I really, really loved that guy out of NC State.
Oh, he's toiled a little bit on a Indiana side that doesn't get the recognition it deserves. And while we're speaking about Indiana, a bit of a shout out to Nate McMillan. He has just done a wonderful job coaching this season. No Oladipo for half a year, integrating Brogdon, then Brogdon gets hurt, loses Jeremy Lamb, gets Depo back, and it completely changes the way the team plays.
Sabonis
comes into the bubble and he loses Sabonis. Yeah, he's just had stuff, just constantly having stuff happen all through this season. And he has just coached that team wonderfully. He's done a brilliant, brilliant effort.
If Philadelphia loses to Indiana in a playoff series, Philadelphia should be embarrassed.
Yeah, it'll and look, as you know, I have like a very personal connection to Brett Brown. My affinity for Brett Brown runs deep, and it's run for 30 years. But if Indiana and Philly play in the playoffs, all things being equal, Indiana win, that will purely come down to coaching, because Philly has such a huge advantage in talent over that Pacers side.
I don't think it's impossible either.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the Sixers are a Jekyll and Hyde team.
Yeah.
The best version of the Sixers could win the title. The worst version of the Sixers
could very easily lose to Indiana.
They could go out 4-1 in the first round. You know, and it doesn't matter who they play, except maybe Brooklyn. But, you just can't get a read on that Sixers side. But whereas with the Pacers, you know they're going to come out with a very good game plan, and they'll play hard, and they will play percentages. So if things do happen to go their way, like TJ Warren getting white hot for 48 minutes, then they can take down anyone, because they raise their floor. The worst of the Pacers is still pretty good, whereas the worst of the Sixers can be terrible.
All right, Jared, what else you got here? I know you haven't talked about your Jazz yet. You haven't talked about Hachimura. I know you want to brag up the Celtics a little bit more. What else you got?
That's your job, man. I mentioned Rui on the last pod as someone who could really thrive in the bubble, simply because there would be nobody else to take shots. And I it's my fault, I neglected to mention Thomas Bryant, but Rui and Bryant, they will get all the shots they can handle. They will become the newest version of the Reggie Theus All-Stars, the guys who average 20 points a game simply because they're on a crap team. And Rui had a rough game last time out, but he was excellent in the first game. 21 points, 8 or 9 rebounds, really efficient from the floor, very confident driving to the hoop. I think the kid's a really good young player. I haven't put my Jazz down on the list. we did win that first game. I know we played particularly after a rough start. We played quite well, surprisingly well. But, man, without Bogdanovic, we're not making any noise. Unless Gobert will always play excellent D. Unless Ingles suddenly rediscovers his shot, unless Conley finds a fountain of youth, unless Gobert turns into, you know, some sort of David Robinson clone, we're not doing anything. We're probably going to lose in the first round, and that shatters me to say, because I really thought that Utah could be a fringe contender, one of these teams that on their night can take out anyone. But Bogdanovic was such a huge part of that, not just the 20 points a game, not just the defense, because he does play very underrated defense on bigger wings, but yeah, he just opened up everything else. He opens up the lane for Gobert, for Conley to drive. He and Ingles have developed a bit of a mind meld, frankly. Same with Clarkson. He works really well with Jordan Clarkson. But
I can't believe how good Clarkson is.
He has... Yeah, I'm with you. I'm shocked. I always thought he was just a really bad gunner. I was, you know, being in Cleveland, I hadn't really watched him for a few seasons because, you know, nobody's eyeballs deserve to watch Cleveland.
No.
But coming to Utah, I really thought, wow, this is a challenge trade. You know, you're, you know, the injured young, you know, injured young potential star in Exum for a guy with his head up his own ass in Jordan Clarkson. But Clarkson, he's been really good. And I, you know, Cavs fans will have to tell me whether he was like this in Cleveland or not, because I don't know, and I can't bring myself to watch the tape. But he's fit into the offense beautifully. He's taken good shots, and more to the point, he hasn't forced bad shots, which has been his MO for his entire career up to this point. He's been a very, very good addition.
All right, Jared, what else you got?
Probably not too much else. I mean, okay. I'm looking forward to seeing how these last few games go. I honestly think we're going to see a lot of rest for LeBron, for Giannis. I think for Kawhi as well, once the two seeds wrapped up. So we'll get to see a lot of the fringe players step up. We'll get the odd, a little bit like Jamal Crawford's 50-point game last season. We'll get one of those games where you sit there and go, really, that guy? I guess we had that, Trey Burke, in the game the other day. What the hell was that? Has he hit that many threes in a year, let alone a game?
I guess he had to get traded by the Knicks. Now he knows how to play.
Ah, there's another one. We talked about the Suns and the Kings, but yeah, the Knicks seem to turn good players into trash almost instantaneously. Yeah, I think we'll see a lot more fringe players, which is always fun to see. It's one of the beautiful things about the last 2 weeks of a normal regular season is that you see random players just stuff the stat sheet. I still think the standard bearer, going back to about probably 2004, 2005, was Bob Sturer when he picked up something like 7 triple-doubles in 10 games or something like that. I like seeing those really random quirks come out in the box score. Is there anything you're looking for in these games before we actually kick off into playoffs, Trey? Because we probably won't do a pod before the playoffs.
I'm ready to get my heart broken. I'm all the way in. It's title or bust for me. That's it. I'm ready to get my heart broken. They've sucked me all the way in.
So it's bust then. Sorry, man, I got to say it. The C's, even if... Look, we talked about how Boston has a puncher's chance against Milwaukee, but they just don't against either of the LA sides.
They really could beat the Lakers. I do think they could beat the Lakers.
I don't think you've got anyone that can handle AD, and I think LeBron will just overwhelm Jaylen Brown. You don't have a Giannis, and you don't have a Brook Lopez, a
Enes Kanter.
You don't
have
guys. Man, I'm about to turn 42 years old. I haven't played high level basketball for 20 years. My knees are calcified. I could beat Enes Kanter. I mean, look, he'd punish me at the other end, but yeah, Enes Kanter wouldn't stay in front of me, Trey. So.
He's really good. He's actually really good in the post, like on offense, though.
Oh, his footwork is majestic. You could write a textbook on watching him in the post. He's a brilliant, brilliant offensive player. He's very limited in what he does, but what he does so, so well. And you can see why he was a number 3 pick, I think, back in the day, because the offensive potential of that guy coming into the league was just immense. Nobody realized, and I guess the league...
He can rebound really well, too.
Yeah, he can, mostly on the offensive glass. He can get beaten on the defensive glass, but he reads the ball well and beats the box out very well. And he gets a lot of his points from that, too. We spoke about Thomas Bryant being a very, very good very good bench center on a good team, because he can torch a backup center, but he won't get torched himself because the backup center isn't as good. Enes Kanter is kind of the prototype for that. He's typecast as that sort of guy now. You wouldn't want to start him, because as soon as he gets as soon as he gets out on an island with a guard, it's over. But if you put him on your opposition's backup five, he'll just grind them into dust. He'll go and get you, you know, 14, 15 points, seven boards in 20 minutes of action. He's very good on that low block.
I'm all the way in, Jared. If you're not first, you're last. I'm ready.
All right, Ricky Bobby. Oh, I can't wait until you have kids and they're called Dr. Quinn and Medicine Woman.
All right, Jared, this was fun. We will definitely do at least one more, not sure when, but sometime during the playoffs. Make sure to follow Jared Idiots Have Won. I think I got that right.
Yep, that's the one.
Yep. Buy a shirt on the store. I think they look incredible. Make sure to follow Jared. Again, we're brought to you by VendettaSportsMedia.com. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time.
Tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears? You, America. Fuck you, Diane.